Welcome to the Randstad third quarter results 2011 conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question and answer session. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to your host, CFO Robert Jan van de Kraats. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you very much. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the conference call on the third quarter results 2011 of Randstad. We're here together at this table with Ben Notenboom, Greg Netland, because of the recent expansion in the United States, and Jan-Pieter van Winsen from the IR department. I'm going to take you through the presentation, and then at the end of the presentation we'll move to Q&A. The agenda is an elaboration on performance, the financial results and the outlook, and as I said, then we'll end with the Q&A. I'm moving right away to slide 5, which shows you the recent market trends and which also indicates that growth has continued, be it at a slower pace, mainly due to the stronger comparables last year. The seasonal trends have remained intact, but effectively what we do see is that the classical patterns that have started early 2010 do not fully continue. One would expect to see acceleration in the white collar and professionals segment, in the permanent placement segment, and that is not coming through fully according to the classical patterns. The industrial segments, however, have continued to be the main growth drivers during this quarter, and the impact of the public sector in the Netherlands and in the UK seems to have stabilized somewhat. Then move on to slide 6. In Q3, as I said, we do see slowing growth but still good performance. The revenues amounted to 4.2 billion, which is a growth of 7% year-on-year organically per working day, just below 7%. The organic growth per working day moved through the quarter from 9% in July to 7% in September, but still house, as in-house still very strong at 18% plus compared to the previous quarter at 29%. Staffing up 5%, Q2 that was 10 against a strong comparison base in the larger countries, and professionals being stable at 7. Perm fees were up 11% organically, and that was 14 in the second quarter. And we do see the gross margin moving from 18.5 to 18.1, which is a decline. Down, it is sequentially down also due to the typical seasonality that we have seen during quite a few years. The acquisition of SFN Group contributed 20 basis points on a year-on-year basis. And we do see impact on the average gross margin from the group because of the continued strong growth in in-house and also the changed geographical mix with, let's say, a higher growth in certain countries and somewhat lower growth, for example, in the Dutch market. The operating one point to add here is the impact of the French subsidy system at the group level. The impact has stated. So we have now completed our, I would say, very disciplined process of price adjustments in France, a little ahead of time. And the operating expenses of the group amounted to 590 million euros. And if one adjusts for SFN and looks at it on a constant currency basis, costs are sequentially down by a million. EBITDA is up 14% to 175 million. And reached a level of 4.1%. Then the Netherlands. In the Netherlands, we have seen revenue growth improving from 3% in Q2 to 4% in Q3. Randstad Netherlands continues to outperform the market substantially in Q3, whereas Tempo Team is still lagging. And revenue decline at Yacht, the professionals business, or the biggest part of the professionals business in the Netherlands, it improved to a low single-digit rate. So the decline is at a low single-digit level now. The decline of the public sector eased somewhat. It is now 8%, year-on-year, so the decline is 8% year-on-year. In Q2, that was still 10. And if you look at the right bottom corner, you can see the share of public sector business in our Dutch book. It moved from 14% to 13% in 2011. So as such, the impact is also easing on the total. The growth in the private sector amounted to 6%, and we do see easing growth in the industrial and technical sector due to the tougher comparison base. The growth in the admin segment is in line with the market. The EBITDA margin came out at 6.4 compared to 6.8 last year, and underlying pricing pressure is stable, but the contributions coming from the professionals segment is lower, and that means we are missing some higher margin EBITDA, so it's lower than last year. In France, on slide 8, it shows you we're gaining market share. We're getting revenue grew by 9% in the third quarter compared to 16 in the second. We're ahead of market, and the automotive and manufacturing segments are the main drivers in the staffing business. We also see improved growth in the professional segment, and permanent placement continues to grow at a relatively attractive level, 23%, and we have seen strong growth in the in-house business with ongoing increase of new clients and transfers. So this is not just transfers, this is clearly growth within our existing client base as well. As I said, the subsidies have been fully compensated now by a disciplined process of price adjustments. And as we mentioned last time, we are in a process of reviewing client profitability, and that might have some effect on growth going forward, because unattractive levels of client profitability might make us decide to terminate certain contracts. The EBITDA amounted to 3.6 compared to last year 3.7, again a strong comparison base, and one should note that profitability of last year was very strong due to the fact that we had substantial overcapacity which was being utilized at that point in time. So the conversion, the incremental conversion or leverage was very high at the time. And currently in the third quarter we have invested in FTEs both in the in-house business and the staffing business. On slide 9, some comments on Germany. Strong performance, growth of 10%. In Q2 this amounted to 16. So this is clearly solid growth despite the very strong comparison base. Note last year, 40% growth, a very substantial quarter. And we do see some signs of a tight labor market, but at the same time we see plenty of possibilities in other parts of Germany. We also see a more favorable mix as a result of continued double-digit growth in the professional field, especially, as you can read under the second bullet, in the IT segment. And our staffing business gets more geared towards the higher skilled workers. During the quarter, growth has slowed to a level of 6% in the month of September. Growth is also supported by a price effect in Germany, which is the result of the adjustments in the collective labor agreement, which were initiated on the 1st of May, partly, and another part kicks in on the 1st of November. EBIT margin at a very good level of 7.4, it compares to 6.9 last year, and the operational leverage has clearly supported us here. Belgium, on slide 10, also strong operating leverage, revenues up 3 compared to 10 in the previous quarter, slightly behind market due to strong focus also here on client profitability. We've seen some very aggressive pricing, and we are stepping away from that in some cases. The industrial segment is the main driver in the Belgium market, and we are clearly ahead of the market in the admin segment. In-house is up 21%, and this was 50% in the previous year in the same quarter, so a substantial comparison base. Professionals is stable at 7%, and if we look at the pattern throughout the third quarter in Belgium, we do see that the month of September was stronger than the previous 2 months, and that it's always hard to predict how this season, the summer season, will behave. And the result is that September was stronger than the previous 2 months. The EBITDA margin arrives at 4.3, and that is also the result of very tight cost control. In the UK, on slide 11, we have seen a challenging environment in the third quarter again. The organic revenue grew by 2%. It is kind of sequentially stable. In September, it arrived at 3. The decline in the public sector, which is still a substantial part of the business, but much smaller than 2 years ago. As you can see at the right bottom corner, it is now 17% of our book. And this decline in this sector, it eased to 25% negative, whereas it was 30 in Q2. The private sector remained strong at a growth level of 11%, and in-house continued to gain market shares. It maintains a clearly high growth rate, and it continues to add new clients as well. So growth within existing clients and new clients. Permanent fees for placements reduced by 8%. The reduction in Q2 was 7%. We clearly see a lower demand in the city-oriented businesses. The EBITDA margin arrived at 0.2 versus 1.2 last year. And this is reflecting high growth at in-house, a decline at the public sector. And please note that that our public sector business in the UK contributed relatively strong to the EBITDA margin of the country as a whole, and that's where we have seen a serious decline. And we also see less contribution from permanent placement, resulting in this lower EBITDA margin. Then North America, which is becoming the largest market of the group now. And maybe I can make the additional comments here that in this country we do see a classical recovery because professionals has taken over the lead and shows very strong growth. Organic revenue came out at 10% higher than than the previous year, same quarter, whereas in the Q2 this was 14%. We think we're at market, but it is clear that the professionals business is outperforming. In Canada, we see solid growth both in staffing and in professionals, and we have consolidated SFN as from the closing date, the 2nd of September, and as such it contributed $118 million to the September revenues. The U.S. staffing in and house was up 3% year-on-year. We did see slowing growth due to the strong comparison base and, again, also here, focus on client profitability. And we have seen an improved mix here in terms of growth contribution of the admin segment and the perm business. U.S. professionals, as I said before, up strong, 15%. IT and engineering are still the main drivers. Healthcare continues to improve, and we also see continued strong growth in the perm contributions. As such, EBITDA margin arrived at 4.7, which is comparing to 3.8 last year, and again this shows strong operational leverage. Some comments on page 13 on SFN Group. As I said, this was included in the group results as from the 2nd of September, but in order to evaluate performance we have included the third quarter results of SFN as a whole, whereas they are not fully being consolidated into Randstad. And the growth in SFN Group is in line with the second quarter of 2011. It amounted to -1%, which is the result of strong focus on improvements of the operating margin, and that margin arrived at 3.8, and it compares to 2.7 last year. The sector performance in the third quarter, looking at the staffing first, 1% down, again the focus on client profitability, EBITDA margin up to 2.1 from 1.7, professionals grew by 2% year on year, also here IT a strong contributor, but also finance. Strong growth of the permanent placement fees was helpful here, and as such the EBITDA margin amounted to 5.7%, which compares to 3.6% last year. And Human Resource Solutions It shows an improved mix. Growth is impacted by the ending of some payroll contracts, but we also see strong growth in the RPO, the recruitment process outsourcing, and the MSP businesses. As such, EBITA arrived at 5.8, and that compares to 4.5. Then the slide on 14, that's the slide that we have used also when announcing the acquisition of SFN, and we have included it here because we have noted that the profile of SFN was not as well known with some of you as we think is necessary. That's why we have included it again. So as you can see here, the combination includes the segment professional services, and that is 41% of the group. That's the dark blue part. It's the number two in the IT segment and the number three in finance and accounting in the professionals market. Staffing services, the share of the total is around 50, and we are the number two player in the clerical segment, number five in the light industrial segment as such, and we do see a strong increase in the density of the staffing network as a result of the combination. And then the remainder, just close to 10%, is Human Resource Solutions, which includes RPO and MSP. And as such, we have become the leader in RPO in the U.S. market, and we have a very substantial platform to offer to our clients in the field of MSP. So conclusion here is that the combination creates number three in the U.S., but it also provides us with a very strong foothold in the professional segment, strengthening the base which was already there, and also a strong foothold in the RPO and MSP space in the United States. Then finally, some comments on the integration process and the synergies on slide 15. The deal was closed within 6 weeks after announcement, and that's always helpful because that helps us to deal with the uncertainty in a very speedy manner. The consolidation is effective as from the 2nd of September. Integration is exactly on track. We have used the 6 weeks between announcement and closing to prepare plans, and as such we have been able to initiate the process very soon after the 2nd of September. And in the third quarter we have included 4.6 million of integration costs, which, as you can see at the lower part of this page, has resulted in some synergies already in the field of the stock compensation plan and the delisting. And our cost synergy ambition amounts to at least 30 million US annually, and you'll see us gradually getting to that target. The annual synergies also include an amount of 10 million of tax savings, which have remained unchanged. So that is the additional comments on SFN. On slide 16, some comments on the segment performance, staffing in-house and professionals. And as you can see in the staffing business, growth has been 5%, arriving at an EBITDA margin of 4.2. The industrial segments are the main drivers here, and growth is slowing in the largest countries. It includes transfers to in-house, impact probably not more than 1%, and it's driven by a clear focus on client profitability. In-house has to deal with a strong comparison base and shows strong operational leverage, arriving at a very solid EBITA margin of 4.7%. And the professionals business arrives at the same amount of the same percentage of EBITA margin, which indicates the opportunity is still there. It's mainly led by the IT and engineering business, with strong perm, with the exception of the UK. And unfortunately, the contribution of the Netherlands and the UK to this segment is still hampered by the public sector exposure. So profitability is in line with last year, mainly due to lower contributions from the Netherlands and the UK, and excellent contribution from the US. Then some comments on, let's say, our take of market segments, as we also always include those. And as you can see here, manufacturing and automotive still are the main drivers of the growth in the blue-collar business across the board. In the professional field, it is mainly IT, and that is in exactly what we see in our main countries. The public sector is still down, but one should note that this sector is only a relevant sector to us in the Netherlands and in the UK. And we do see improved growth in our US healthcare business, in our health and social work in Germany, and in the medical business in France, Appel Medical, that is. And then an update on slide 18 on our additional organic investments in professionals, what we call the Growth Accelerator. We've launched it in Q1 in order to further strengthen a leading position in countries and certain segments, with the aim to accelerate growth in the next 2 years. And the ambition was to gradually add 500 FTEs based on our field steering model. So we'll continue to grow on a regular basis, but on top of that we have allocated some funds to accelerate the growth. In Q3 we do see continued implementation of the validated professionals concept in the existing businesses. We have added 88 FTEs, predominantly in North America, Australia, Spain and Germany, and we can see those contributions clearly being successful. The total net investment amounted to 1.4 million, which is a relatively limited amount. And year to date we have now added 178 FTEs. It's going a little slower because it's very much driven by the real performance in the companies, but we do have clear segments in certain countries where we are successful and where we will continue to add people as a result of this program. And that brings us to the financial results on slide 20. The key financial points: EBITDA up 7%, and it includes integration costs and one-offs of a level of almost 11 million, and we'll continue to disclose it like this. The effective tax rate arrived at 31%, diluted EPS at 12. Moving average of DSO, showing our working capital management, it improved by 1 day in a context where large clients are clearly pushing for extended payment terms. They sometimes believe we are a bank, whereas it doesn't say so on the door of our businesses, but they'll continue to push, and in the meantime we'll continue to improve our collection discipline. Net debt arrived at close to 1.5 billion, and the leverage ratio now amounts to 2x EBITDA. And we made the point that at the end of the year our leverage ratio should arrive at a level below 2.0. It's good to see that already in this quarter it is within the limits of our policy. With the banks we have an arrangement that we can go up to 3.5 times, but internally we try to stay at or below 2.0 times, and this is clearly confirming our dividend policy. The free cash flow increased by 12% to a substantial amount of almost 200 million euros, and that is driven by the improved results and the somewhat higher release of working capital, which is the result of less growth and somewhat more payables. The income statement, which is kind of recapturing everything I've just said, just pointing out that the net finance costs are reflecting here an amount of 7 million, and we're very happy to see that as a result of our financing policy and our use of floating interest rates. I'm now moving on to the gross margin slide on 22. In Q3 we arrived at 18.5 last year and now at 18.1, and what's in between is explained here. The temp margin is lower, roughly 50 basis points, as a result of mix and price effects. It is clearly impacted by the continued high growth in-house, and also by the fact that some lower gross margin markets are growing faster than a higher gross margin market like the Netherlands. And I also should outline here that the gross margin is not always a solid indicator of the potential to make EBITDA, because if we can serve our clients through in-house, in the segment reporting you have seen how much that contributes to our group EBITDA. Again, no impact of the change in defense subsidies. The perm fees increased by 11% and are now 9% of gross profit versus 8.5% last year in the same quarter. and this compares to a bit north of 12% of gross profit at the time Randstad and VDR merged. So theoretically, still a way to go here. We also see higher growth in the lower margin payrolling business. And the green box here is the contribution of SFN, because it comes in with a somewhat higher gross margin, contributing to the average gross margin of the group. Then some selected balance sheet items on 23. Again, the leverage ratio of 2 and a substantial amount of receivables. So effectively, that is what we focus on when managing the balance sheet. The consolidated cash flow statement on 24, it arrives at the free cash flow number I just mentioned, and you can see that our net additions in PPA, which effectively is our CapEx, 17 million, so still at a very controlled level, and then the 194 million is reconciled with the change in net debt, which increased by 417 million, and the bridge is made out of the acquisition of SFN, which is like 99% of the amount here, the finance cost, and an amount of 55 million translation effects. And that is explained by the following, because we are reconciling here with the level of net debt, and part of the net debt consists out of US dollars and yens, because as you know, our policy is to match the EBITDA composition with the net debt composition. So net debt is effectively it's constructed in a way that it matches the currencies in which we will redeem net debt. And the US dollar and yen have appreciated during the quarter, and that effect is explained here. That's the 55 million euros. So our policy is clearly economically the right one, but this is the effect as a result of that. Then finally, the outlook for Q4. Organic growth for working day has decreased, as I mentioned, through the quarter to just below 7% in September. We also expect to see that gradual slowdown continued in Q4. The focus on client profitability, which I've mentioned a couple of times, will remain and will have some impact on growth going forward. We also expect the underlying, so that's the organic basis of OPEX, to remain in line with the third quarter. SFN will be fully consolidated in Q4, and also Fuji staff was fully consolidated as from the second half of October last year, so the impact will be minimal here. The integration cost related to SFN that we expect in Q4 will be sort of similar to Q3. And we clearly expect the leverage ratio to be below 2.0 times EBITDA by the end of the quarter. And the exit rates for September, that is organic growth per working day in the Netherlands, amounted to 3% growth in the Netherlands, 10% growth in France, in Germany 6, in Belgium 6, in the UK 3, in Iberia 0, and in North America 9%. So this totals to just below 7% for the group. Then one more remark to make, and that is, please note the dates of the 1st and 2nd of December. We'll have our analyst and investor days at the exciting location of Randstad's group headquarters in Diemen, which we feel is an efficient way of meeting you. And I'm now moving to Q&A, and the suggestion I have, actually the request I have, is to limit yourselves to two questions each. Please go ahead.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star, then one on your touchtone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the hash key or the pound sign. If you are using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then one on your touchtone phone. Matthew Lloyd from HSBC is online with a question.
Good morning, gentlemen. Two questions, because I did hear you. first... yeah, it's amazing. I can actually count. First question, in terms of SFN, in terms of SG&A costs, is there anywhere that you think it has particular and obvious inefficiencies that you might be able to sort of put a better control over? And then secondly, a sort of a more general question, in terms of European growth, do you feel that sort of Belgian growth rates are a little worrying in terms of historically, I think they've led some of your European growth rates, and barring a couple of weeks, they've been a little bit on the weak side?
Yeah, my first question, I assume that you are referring to more efficiency on top of the synergies we have defined?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. No, so because obviously the synergies, I think, are obvious if you look at the constellation of what we've bought and the overlap, so that's clear. The efficiencies are mainly, of course, a twofold. One, if you look at our professionals business, quite a few of them are actually doing very well. The thing what we do see, however, is that the growth rate, so the sales efficiency, if you want, is too low. So we feel we could add to that. On the other side, the RPO position of SFN, then being market leader there, puts efficiency in some of our delivery systems for specific contracts. On the cost level, moving or changing staffing revenue or what they call in-house to our in-house concept will actually make us more efficient, I'm confident about, and make us and will actually also enable the branches to be more focused on the right segments. And as you might have seen, of course, but the profitability of our staffing organization in the US is this quarter at an all-time high, as far as I remember, and that is because of the right positioning of the company. And what we see in SFN that we can still add quite a lot in that respect to those operations. So that's why also strategically, and then I'm not talking about next set, of course, client synergies, international contracts, etc., because that'll drive potentially add top line even more. Are the obvious parts where we'll be looking at being more efficient, financial discipline. I don't think there's much to be gained. They are an efficient and very professional company, so that's fine. But basically, I think those are the main areas where we would see opportunities.
Yeah.
And the last thing I forget, by the way, is marketing, obviously, because we're building a real big pool of marketing budget now. With a lot of rebrands that we have done, obviously, the shadow voice is becoming increasingly strong and on a more efficient or so cheaper base. All the other stuff on economies of scale, back office maybe, but actually if you look at any business in our industry above 300-400 million, economies of scale are limited, so that will not have a major impact.
Okay.
Second question, whether or not Belgium is an indication for the rest of Europe to follow. Is that the question?
Yeah.
Unless I don't think so. I think we see some markets where we have different the two different ones, the cyclical and the structural growth. Structural growth, of course, still being a big opportunity in many of the markets where penetration is low. And you see that markets, again, companies, organizations are more and more looking for the efficiency of the labor they put to work. So that's us. And demographics is going to help us. So I see a structural growth opportunity in many markets, also the more mature ones, if you look at that. In Belgium, we've also been rather selective on the contracts we wanted and we didn't want, because we are looking at profitability in a few more markets, as you might have read through our press release.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is opportunity to have better returns in other contracts than some of the ones we have. Or we will renegotiate them, as we have done in France successfully this quarter, which is not a guarantee for the future, but we're looking more at that. So no, it's not. And for me, it's not an indication of potential slowdown. I think the biggest effect we're going to see is from confidence potentially returning, if the market would perceive the solution as being put forward by the politicians actually this morning, as being successful. I think that is by far the most important driver of any economic activity. That means also us. A long answer to a short question, sorry.
And I won't ask a follow-up question because that would indicate that I can't count, so I'll just say that.
Toby Reeks from Merrill Lynch is online with a question.
Morning, guys. I'll stick to the two as well. Could you just sort of give us an idea of how you're thinking about the contracts that you're sort of renegotiating or potentially exiting? You sort of talk about going through that process in France, but you've also done it in the US and Belgium. What sort of size are they as a percentage of revenues potentially, or at what level of gross margin do you start to review these contracts?
Yeah, it's not a fixed number, of course. If you look at the margin, we look at profitability per client. So depending again on the concept through which we could supply a client, there's a difference. If you would use the SFN RPO model, it's a very, very low cost model, so you can make a lot of money on an average of a very low margin. If you look at our in-house, we could still be very efficient. If it's a contract that would actually include a wide network of branches supplying a low quantity of people, so having low revenues at a low margin, that's where we actually put the limit. So we look at it per client and then per operation. So it's basically impossible to put a number against it because it has all the variables you can imagine.
And proportion of sales?
Yeah, that we can't say, because if we now look at France, we had anticipated already having a negative effect on growth from these sort of negotiations in Q3. It didn't happen because we're in the midst of negotiations, so a number of clients actually will accept the fact that we will need a better price, or that we will service them in a different way. So it will be actually it's too early to say. We have to wait for negotiations. So far, so good.
Okay, and then on the in-house business, can you give us an idea of the number of new clients you added in Q3 relative to Q2 and how that's progressed, I guess, from Q1 and Q2 into Q3?
No, we don't share that sort of detailed information on clients, sorry.
Okay, never mind.
Next question.
Ken TVC from ABN AMRO is online with a question.
Good morning, gentlemen. I will restrict two questions as well. And the first one is on the SFN margin improvement. If I recall correctly, SFN stepped away from payrolling last year. But can you indicate what the gross margin effect has been in Q3 and year to date? And if you already see the effect easing? And my second question would be on your marketing strategy. If I understood well, Q3 cost base was a bit lower due to the timing of marketing expenses, but what would in the current market conditions be your strategy towards marketing?
Yeah, so to start with the easy question, the easiest is the marketing, of course. We always have hung on to a reasonably high spend relative to many of our colleagues on marketing, and we will maintain that level. We did have some of course exceptionals where we did rebrands, and in some countries that was a bit more expensive. That's why the comparison base might be misleading a bit. For example, if you remember the rebrand in France, which of course was quite an effort, in Belgium, etc. So that's, I think, in general, we'll hold on to marketing expenses. The percentage exactly of the change in payroll contracts is of course impossible to give because there are too many variables. And to be honest, if I could, my apologies, I wouldn't give them to you. So we can't do that. And then second
can you give an indication then of what the gross margin effect just has been year on year, without looking at any other effects for SFN?
No, payroll effects in general are of course a very low margin business. Same by the way, for example, in Holland, but they're still way above average in profit. But in this case, they were that low that it didn't make sense to have them. It's a $2 billion company, so that means the effects of any individual contract is always limited.
Okay. Thank you.
Jamie Brandwood from UBS is online with a question.
Morning. Two questions. Firstly, just on the permanent recruitment activities, could you give us a sense for the perm exit rate in September and maybe give us a little bit of regional color, particularly given the strength in the U.S.? And then my second question would be on the EU Agency Work Directive, which, as you mentioned in your press release, has now kicked in. Which countries are you most optimistic you will start to see some positive impact from the EU Agency Work Directive in 2012? Thanks.
Yeah, on the first question, permanent placement, September was the highest month of the year in permanent placement. We should also realize there's some SFN in there, but still, we saw some markets with some very decent growth.
But on an organic basis, was it much better than the 11% which you saw for the quarter?
Look at the total number here. It was about 13%, so yeah, it was higher.
Okay.
But as we know, if you extrapolate these numbers, we're going to end up in heaven.
No, I know.
and we might, but it's not a guarantee, because it's a very volatile market, so I wouldn't extrapolate that too much.
No, absolutely. Yep.
And the other part of the question
was the EU directive.
Oh, EU directive, yeah. Yeah. What we've seen, of course, is that quite a few countries did not implement the directive.
Exactly, yeah.
Or only partly, so that means it'll take quite a lot of lobbying, including potentially court cases that would be initiated by our industry associations, not by individual companies, obviously, to make sure that countries would stick to the changes that they should actually implement in their legislation. The effect on total revenue for the total group will be immaterial next year.
So which countries do you believe have fully implemented, other than the UK?
Yeah, very few. I think France is a good area where they've made most of the changes. Mm. Spain have made an attempt, but still they put the unions in between the actual effect that should occur. Mm. Italy, we haven't seen anything. Belgium, we haven't seen anything.
What about Germany?
Germany, the government, nothing happened.
Yep.
So that sector was open.
Yeah, the sector is open, but nothing happened. So
construction in Germany?
Construction in Germany. Leo, I think it's open.
Nope.
Yeah, it's open, but there's hardly any business.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, on the back of the directive, I would not expect material change in our growth numbers next year.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Thank you.
David Taylor from Rabo Securities is online with a question.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. First, a question on SFN. If I make the right calculation, I arrive at a gross margin level of about 24-25% of SFN in Q3 in September. Is that the correct figure, and how sustainable would that be in your view, coming from, let's say, a little bit more than 20%? And then secondly, on the Netherlands, I think Manpower was issuing quite some cautious statements on specifically the Dutch staffing market, seeing a slowdown the last couple of weeks. Could you confirm that, or are you surprised by these kind of statements? Thanks.
No, I mean, David, I would never argue the fact that you do know how to calculate. So it's more the assumption we would have to actually discuss on. But the professional business has been doing well in SFN, so they have a nice margin. By the way, the calculation is easy because we indicated that the positive effect on the group was 0.2%. So
exactly.
Yeah, and I'm sure you were better at maths than I was, so I guess you're in the right range.
I'm not sure, but maybe a very quick follow-up. Whatever
I am. I am.
Okay. Whatever the level would be, do you believe, let's say, we can use the September level also for the coming months, approximately?
No, there's a, this is Robert Jan. They have been going through full-year closing in the month of September, and as you know, effectively that means that you look again at your provisioning, at your accruals and so forth. So this is typically not the right standard to take forward. So it might be a little at the high end.
And David, take into account that September is the last month of the quarter where typically most of the permanent placements are included, which also impacts the gross margin. So September is not a run rate going forward.
Okay, thanks. And then maybe on the Netherlands?
Yeah, I'm a bit puzzled if you look at the by that remark, to be honest. If you look at the ABU numbers, We see, actually, if you go back, what is it, six quarters, it's almost a flat line going from whatever, 8 to 4 or 3%, 4% again. Very stable, so I don't see certain drastic changes in this market. I was a bit surprised. But again, if you start from a low base, a few big lines can have a big variation.
Yeah, so it's not fully confirmed?
No.
Okay. And one final remark maybe, Ben. Good luck with your team. And compliments for last week.
Thank you.
Robert Plant from JP Morgan is online with a question.
Good morning. There is a view that SFN had perhaps overinvested in back office systems, particularly ERP, for the size of its business. Is this something that you found when you've looked at SFN?
It's Greg. Hi. The for sure the company had invested significantly in their IT system. The good news is it's fully depreciated, and we've got some very nice IT systems to work with now.
Is that a clear answer?
That's fine. Thanks.
Mark Bartenberg from ING is online with a question.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Two final questions from my side. First of all, the gross margin. If you look underlying, stepping out of SFN Group, the quarter-on-quarter decline is around 50 basis points. Could you perhaps give a bit more detail where that's coming from, which areas are specifically still a bit worrying on gross margin, seeing gross margin pressure? That's my first question.
Yeah. Mark, I'll take that one then right away. And actually, I was aiming to be ahead of your question by elaborating on the slide on the gross margin, because it is clearly the result of the mix in the segments in-house leading the way, and also the mix in geographies, where, unfortunately, the growth in the Netherlands is not yet at the level that the growth was, for example, in France, and that clearly has an impact on the average gross margin of the group. These are the key contributors.
But in terms of mix, if you look quarter on quarter, the mix for Holland was basically the same versus the group as in Q3. So are you seeing perhaps also in Holland still pressure on the gross margin? Because if I look to ABU, it still seems to be that the gross margin is under pressure.
Yeah, the pricing pressure is stable. That's the point we've also made. So that's not causing this. It's really the mix within the growth that we see in the third quarter, which of course is different from the growth level in Q2.
And as Roger mentioned, over a few years already, there's always a seasonal pattern from Q2 to Q3, which also plays a role here.
Yeah, sure, but it's normally around 20, maximum 30 basis points or so, now 50 basis points. Perhaps then explain my mix in-house, but I thought maybe perm UK or perhaps still pressure on the Holland, explaining a bit of that.
Yeah, and the fact that we have a decline in permanent placement fees in the UK doesn't help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then my second question, Germany, could you give us an update on legislation in terms of equal pay, where we stand there? Can we expect any outcome there from the court? Any lobbying in terms of offsetting equal pay versus a temp contract or so?
We still have a CLA that's running until summer next year. And obviously, as always, you start to negotiate the way beforehand on the collective labor agreements. And the nice part is, of course, in the negotiation, you never know where it's going to end. So it's impossible to give an update now. Yeah, second message.
So this one is running till, you said, next year. The CLA is running till?
The end of next year. The end of October. Yeah.
And in between, they can, you can change that around if they start negotiating and break it open. Isn't that possible?
Usually you need two parties to agree that the agreement you've actually committed to is no longer valid, because or else you have an agreement, right? Obviously, if we can give something and get something better back, then we're always prepared to open any contract. But it gives us time to actually do the right things.
Okay, that's good news. Thanks.
Yeah, to be honest, Mark, it's no news, because that's how it works. Okay.
Tom Sykes from Deutsche Bank is online with a question.
Morning, everybody. Just first question was just in the mix of light industrial versus the rest of the group. Just wondered what you might have been told about production schedules from some of the larger manufacturers that you supply in Q4 and Q1. And then just on Germany, obviously it's quite a tight labour market. Are you still able to match the length of contracts of the candidates to the length of contracts that you have with the clients at all, please?
Yeah, what we see in the industrial segment is the obvious development, as you've also seen in our segments. Automotive, for example, still shows big growth, but we do see that they are tuning down the planning, so that as is to be expected if you look at all the other data in the market. So I don't see anything unusual there, Tom, and I know you're smart enough to see all the other trends yourself. So it's in line with what you would expect. I see very few different things there. Germany, the matching, of course, the shortage is regional, especially in the technical area. It's difficult to find people, which is down south. As I mentioned before, unemployment in the Munich area is about 3%, so that really is tough. On the other hand, if you look at the percentage of orders filled in Germany, that looks to be a flat line, so that means we don't have too big an impact there, but it's in specific areas where it's difficult. In other areas, we still see enough potential to fill the orders. So it might in the end have a slight change in mix, but it's nothing disastrous yet. And the other thing that's starting more and more, of course, is a sort of cross-border staffing, if you want, or actually people moving within Germany from one area to the other.
Right.
But that's always a process that takes some time to gain momentum, because people have to organize, etc. It's something a bit more complicated to organize. But it's not disastrous yet, but indeed in some areas, especially technical area, you see that the shortages are getting more difficult to handle.
But you wouldn't see that as a kind of increase in idle time risk at all?
No, on the contrary, yeah. On the contrary, it should actually reduce idle time, although idle time is very low, so I would also not put in big improvements in the spreadsheets, because we are at a very efficient rate already.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the idle time on the way up. It's just that if you're guiding to slower growth out of Germany, or the growth in Germany is a bit slower, then if you're having to sign people up to longer contracts, then, you know, it's kind of the inbuilt idle time risk on the way down. But obviously, you're implying that.
Yeah, that's that way, yeah. Yeah, no, I think we've had a lot of practice in having the right contracts. If you look at what was in December 2009 when we lost, I don't know how many, but anyhow, 10,000 of workers, and we still didn't have a problem with the idle time.
Okay.
We'll try to stick to the same practice.
And sorry, just to follow, your comments on autos, automotive, would that be in all regions? Would that include Germany as well?
Less so at the moment.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Aaron Rambokus from Kempen is online with a question.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. A question on profitability. Randstad has an official target to keep the group profitability between the 4 and 6% bracket. And if I look at the consensus for this year, assuming that it's not will not be far off, you will be below that. And of course, there are some structural trends like the government in the Netherlands, UK. Robert Jan, you mentioned the distorted recovery pattern, meaning that white collar in Europe is not taking off as fast as anticipated, and we see a cyclical downturn in blue collar. So to what extent is this target still realistic? I mean, is it a hard target for Randstad to achieve it next year, looking how the revenue trends are developing? Or can you update us on that? Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have a downturn in blue collar. Huh? That leads the way
weakening.
In terms of... But I can see your point on the in terms of the progress being made in increasing profitability. The underlying assumption that we have always stated for getting to the 5 to 6% is that we need to be able to leverage the base. So that requires some growth. And if we do continue to see growth also next year, you'll see us making progress. And that is clearly strategically something that we have reinforced in the company, and that is also leading the way in the plans for 2012. So that means we are expecting to move on and to close the gap gradually. So there's no reason for us at all to adjust these targets.
Okay, but suppose we will have a scenario that you go for flat revenue growth for next year. Do you think that Randstad's cost base is flexible enough to go to the lower bracket of that range, or is it unachievable given the scale you have in certain regions and the investments you're making?
Well, Arun, we have shown in the downturn that we can make very significant adjustments to the cost base. Roughly 80% of the adjustments to the cost base at that time were realized through natural attrition. So there really is a hell of a flexibility in the company. The question is, is it necessary and where is it? Because the mix that we meet at the moment is a bit confusing. We do see substantial growth in certain markets where we are adding people, whereas in other markets we do not see the growth to fill up the overcapacity that we have, and that means the leverage is insufficiently improving to really make a lot of progress. And that is why we have reinforced our ambition again internally for next year to make sure that we are managing this very tightly.
Thank you very much.
Andy Grobler from Credit Suisse is online with a question.
Good morning. Just following on from Tom's question about automotive, we've heard from some of the bigger automotive companies that they are actively looking to cut temp headcount into Q4 and maybe into Q1. Are you seeing that begin to affect your business, and will you be directly affected by the comments from the likes of Peugeot and so forth?
Yeah. Hello, Jacques van den Broek here. On the Peugeot thing, we are not touched, because this happens in a certain factory where we are not a supplier. So in the short term, we will not be hit on the Peugeot thing.
In general, what we see is that some of the truck manufacturers do see a slowdown a bit and are scheduling less people. But not to the extent you refer to 10-15%, not what I recognize yet. Might happen, we'll see.
Okay. Thanks. And just one other quick question. Just looking at the number of outlets in the rest of the world region, it fell quite sharply Q3 from Q2. What is the reasoning for that?
Well, that's interesting to note that indeed, and that is the result of our merger in Japan, where we are merging the white collar and the blue collar business, which was, white collar was Fuji staff and the blue collar was iLine, and these companies have joined forces because we want them to be closer together, and as a result of that we have adjusted the number of outlets. Nothing special, so to say.
Yeah, so they were administered as two different ones, whereas they were in the same building. So and then there's only one left where actually physically nothing has changed.
Okay.
Some say they were not in the same building, but then we put them in the same building because it creates efficiencies and cross-selling.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Charles Wilson from Goldman Sachs is online with a question.
Good morning. With your in-house business and the geographies where it's growing faster, do you see any impact in the market as a whole on pricing as competition tries to retain that business or compete more effectively?
There's no more competition, at least price pressure in that segment, than there is in other big contracts. So in general, that is the case. Shaq, maybe you want
to... Yeah, what's interesting to see is that, for example, in France, where you've seen that we've rather successfully increased pricing, in fact, that in-house this was easier than in the non-in-house business, which, of course, has to do with the value we supply to clients there.
Okay, and just on the last two quarters, the margin's been down year on year in the in-house. Can you just say why that is, please? The EBITA margin.
Yeah.
Excuse me?
The last two quarters, the profit,
EBITA margin in in-house, that's what you're asking for?
Yes, please.
Yes.
The margin at in-house in Q2 was partly affected by a one-off negative in Belgium, which went directly into margin. We now regard result in-house to be stable.
Yeah, and the fact that the French business is now contributing more to the in-house portfolio as a whole, and that comes in with a somewhat lower, as well as the UK, where we have seen significant growth in in-house, has some dampening effect on the return here. Can I ask you to move for the last question?
Yeah, that was my last question.
Yeah, but also in general, operator, please. We'll take the last question now.
Our last question comes from Konrad Sommer from Berenberg Bank.
Hi, good morning. Just one question on the EBITDA margin of SFN in Q3, the 3.8%. I'd like to get a bit more clarity on where the substantial improvement has come from. Is that something related to you guys? Is that something related to the general growth in the market or any particular actions?
Yeah, Conrad, it's Greg. The answer is kind of a combination of things. If you look at page 13, you'll see the profitability in both the staffing and the professionals business was up. There's numerous factors involved, so it's kind of a combination of some better margin trends, as Robert John mentioned, in the gross margin, some catch-up on some state unemployment, and then you've got the third factor, which is some efficiencies in the back office. So it's a combination of things, but primarily the strategy of driving the gross margin is helping us on the operating margin.
Yeah,
with that focus on client profitability.
And Conrad, please note that the first synergies have started to come in as well.
Yeah.
Right. So if you hadn't acquired SFN, the EBITDA margin was likely going to be lower than what it is now.
Of course. And the stock price, and the stock price also.
Yeah, but remember, this is a pro forma, so you wouldn't have seen that significant of a difference.
Well, that's exactly where my question comes from, because I assume you're going to raise margins, but I wouldn't expect you to have such a big impact in just one quarter, as in 1 month. So I'm trying to figure out where the underlying improvement came from.
Well, Konrad, SFN also made very explicit at the time it was still independent that it was focusing on improvement of EBITDA.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, they have also shown somewhat lower growth already in the previous quarter. So this is in line, I think, with their announcements. And on top of that, we do have some elements like, for example, the synergies that have started to come in.
Again, it's a mix of what we had. As the summary showed, the focus on profitability within the company, a little bit the synergy already kicking in, and the third one is the closing of the quarter where there were some favorable provisions, etc.
But I think
so there's not one reason for this effect. It's a mix of the three.
And the good news is that this was happening before we took over, so I think the efforts of SFN had begun to already drive this improvement.
Yeah. Right. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much. This completes the third quarter call on the Randstad 2011 results, and we hope to see you at the Investor and Analyst Days early December. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.